guarded by Morose, who's back in. Crinkle. And we got a foul on a moving pick against Jonah Freedy. That's two on the senior. Football stalwart. So Trey Duncan's going to inbound it to Cook. 9:40 is your time remaining, a 19-point Blackshirt lead. Cook goes to the right backcourt, and he signals some movement here. Now he comes to the middle, goes around the screen, kicks it to Morose in the corner. Morose doesn't have it. Staub looking. Staub doesn't have it. Morose in the corner. Nope. They're trying to set Morose or Staub up for some threes. Krinkle has the top of the key. He's going to shoot it. Yes, Tommy Krinkle! 9 points for the senior from Banting Park. Williams brings it up for the North Stars now. 55-33. Sutner has it in the corner. Sutner nowhere to go. Dishes it to Freedy. Freedy nowhere to go. He dishes it out to Williams. Williams puts a beautiful fake on Cook. And he gets fouled by Karinko, I believe, in the act of shooting. Williams a little bit out of control there on the drive, but there was definite contact there. Two fouls on Karinko, and North Star should be in the bonus, but this should be... Oh, they're calling it a 1-on-1. No, it is a shooting foul. Two shots, yep. Here's the first from Williams. And that's going to fall through. 7 points so far for the senior guard, 6 foot senior guard. ...55-34 is your score. And the second shot from Williams, and that's going to roll out. Rebounded beautifully by Pano, who's in. Pano sinks it. So Pano again off the bench, like Benny Johnson, instant points. 4 points for Pano. The Pano man, number 20. I think he's had a role on the North Star football team. Cook's dribbling it up now slowly. 55-36 is your score. Gives him Rose in the corner to Krinkle on the wing. Back to Staub in the top. Trey Duncan now takes it, drives. Oh, good looking layup by Duncan, but it won't fall. Had to put a spin on that. As Williams comes, he's going to drive to the middle, pull out, and shoot. In and out. What a great, oh, Pano almost had a great tip. But Morose has the rebound. Cook's got it again, driving at Williams. The bank shot, no good. And it's going to go out of bounds on Cook. North Stars ball. So I'm kind of surprised here with the 19-point deficit. I haven't seen any type of press from the North Stars here. I know the Black Shirts got a lot of great ball handlers, but... So Williams... passes to Eichenstadt back in. Eichenstadt goes past the pick from Freedy to Pano. Pano misses everything on that one. And Robinson to Krinkle in the corner. Nope, Krinkle wisely. Oh, stolen there by Sutner against Robinson. Oh, and there's a foul on Robinson. Good defense there, but there was contact. So Sutner's going to go to the charity stripe. That's two fouls against Daniel Robinson, so... no real foul trouble for the Black Shirts. And again, it's a 55-36 Black Shirt lead here. Sutner's got 5 points tonight. And in and out for Sutner. So North Stars having their free throw shooting woes. So Still's going to come back in eventually. Check's going to come in. So Williams is going to go out. Duncan's going to go out. Check's going to come back in. 7:41 is your time remaining. Sutner, second one's good. So 6 points for Sutner and a 55-37 Blackshirt lead with 7:38 and counting as Check brings it up. Looking for someone to pass who has Krinko underneath. Krinkle well-guarded, kicks it out to Staub for three, and that's off the back of the rim. Rebounded, oh, it goes to Eichstadt. Eichstadt driving in, kicks it to Freedy. Freedy nowhere to go. Oh, he's going to dribble now. Back out to Sutner, top of the key. Sutner goes around to pick. Oh, errant pass, recovered by Cook. This should be a beautiful duck. Tyrant Cook brings the house down with a kiss to the crowd. 24 points for Cookie. Still now driving around a pick. And we got a moving foul on Pano. Three fouls already. Pano's not bashful with those fouls. And Haas will come in for Suttner. 6:57 remaining. As the inbound goes to Cook. It's Ike, Stott, and Haas in the backcourt. Freedy, Pano still in the forward spots. Krenko to a driving check. Back out to Moroz for three. Moroz off the back of the rim. Rebounded by Eichstadt. North Stars now on the break. Haas from the left wing. Nowhere to go. Guarded by Moroz. Pulls up. Gets it to Still at the top of the key. Again, they're playing a man black shirt defense. Eichstadt. A dish there to Pano. Beautiful pass to Haas. Back to... Oh! And a foul go against Pano. There was a lot of passing underneath by the North Stars, and you wondered if Pano should have dished that instead of passing it. That's four on Pano. So Jaden Miles will come in, presumably for... No, he's going to come in for Eichstadt. So North Stars looking to line up a little bit bigger here. It's Cook, Robinson, Check, Tadioka, and Moroz for the black shirts here. 6:12 remaining. Moroz looking for a cutter. Gets it over to Cook in the backcourt. Cook fakes. Goes past Haas. And an easy layup for Cook. Past Cooper Haas. 26 for Cookie now. Now some pressure from the black shirts. And a foul is called. That might be against Check. That's four on Check. Four for number four. Check with 2 points and two assists tonight. Suttner is going to come back in. Tyler Suttner, and he's going to replace Pano. Pano going out with four fouls. So it's a one-on-one situation for Miles, who was fouled on the inbound pass. It's a 59-37 black shirt lead. And Miles makes the first. His first points in the game. First point, if we're being grammatically correct. Second shot for Miles. That was out the back of the rim. Rebounded by Moroz. Gives it to Cook. While Cook takes his time dribbling up, no hands it a check. I want to give a big shout out to Libby Andrews Miller, the coach of the South mock trial team. Won the state championship 2 years ago, finished fourth in the state last year. And they've got a match tomorrow in Brookfield. Oh, they're definitely gonna get Cook with the hook. An easy call to make. I can see it all the way up here. He's got to mask that better. With his speed and quickness, he doesn't need to do it either. But that's three on Cook with 5:35 remaining as Haas brings it up. Some light pressure in the backcourt from Robinson. Haas to Still in the left wing. Still driving around Moroz. Gets it to Miles in the corner. Miles guarded by Cook. Miles takes a look. Gives to Haas. Is going to shoot for three. Off the back of the rim. Check gets the rebound. Check's going to take it maybe all the way. No one's guarding him. Check, it's easy, too. Ethan Check. So a rebound and a basket for Ethan Check. Miles comes in. And Check draws another charge. That's the first up, Miles. 14 fouls for the North Stars. So Check with four fouls, rolls the dice, and draws the charge. I don't know if I'd agree with that call. But the North Stars will call timeout with 5:04 left, trailing the Black Shirts 61-38. And we're going to take a break here. Calvin?
Yeah. Hey, this is Don Brown inviting you to get local with me every Saturday morning, 8 o'clock, on my show, This Week in Waukesha, live from the office of former Alderman Don Paul Brown. Local news, local sports, local people, local music and culture. This Week in Waukesha, every Saturday, 8 a.m., here on Walk Radio, 540 a.m., 101 FM. The show.
What is dadication?
I think a parent's job is to protect our children, but also prepare them for the world so they become good, kind human beings.
That's dadication. Find out more.
Okay, welcome back to Waukesha South here on the Black Shirt Sports Radio Network. As Tadioka inbounds to check, the Black Shirts taking their time with a 61-38 lead against crosstown rivals Waukesha North. Check gets it back from Krinkle off the strip. Cook now has it in the right backcourt for the Black Shirts. North Star staying in their zone, 2-3 zone now, as Robinson has the ball in the left backcourt. Gets it to Check, closer to the top of the key. Check drives around Miles. Check, a beautiful dish to Tadioka for the easy layup. Tadioka from Check. That's two assists we know of for Check. And 4 points for Tadioka. Haas dribbling now. He goes to the right wing. Guarded by Cook. Now he comes back to the top of the key. A lot of dribbling for Haas, the sophomore. Guarded by Cook. Guess still top of the key. Still well covered by Moroz. He was looking for a three, but decided no. Suttner inbound to Freedy to Haas. Haas fakes the three. Goes past Cook. Tries to draw a foul, and he makes a layup. A beautiful move by Cooper Haas. That's 4 points for Haas, and a timeout is called. I'm guessing by the North Stars again. So we'll take another quick break here on the Black Shirt Sports Radio Network.
27% of the American workforce, and some even say 30%, were in unions who had representation and who clearly did not have to worry about whether or not they were going to get their fair share. But I'm definitely going to fight for people who get the short end of the stick in this society only because they don't have representation. That's who I am.
Check out the Earl Ingram Show every day from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. only on WAUK 540 a.m. 101 FM, The Shaw.
Dad, I picked up your pills, made your lunch, and your laundry is done.
When you care for a loved one, you take care of everything. But are you taking care of yourself? Find free care guides at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
And we're back to Waukesha South High School. And tomorrow morning on This Week in Waukesha, my guests will be Rhonda Schmidt from Civic Theater and Ryan Rehack, Artistic Director for Outskirts Theater. And Outskirts Theater, we talk about the Outskirts Theater production of Heathers, the musical, starting in January. So join us at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. We'll also talk about the WIA decision not to break up the Classic 8 football conference and how that impacts Waukesha South. So Robinson has the ball, going around heavy pressure, gives it to Tadioka. Tadioka dishes out to Cook. Cook's going to dribble in. Back to Check. Check for the shot. Nope, that's off. Rebounded by, it's off Williams. Williams had a handle on it, but touched it on the line. So the Black Shirts will get it, leading 63-40 with 3:37 remaining. So pretty evident the Black Shirts will go to an even record, but we undefeated in conference. Inbound to Moroz in the right corner. Moroz double covered. And there is a foul. Looks like it's going to get Cooper Haas. That's a sixth foul. So North Stars have one to give. And tackle inbounded all the way to their own side of the court to Check. Check will pass it to Robinson in the left backcourt. Back to Check in the middle. Check to Cook all alone. Cook from deep. That's off the back of the rim. Rebounded by Moroz. He hits it off the North Star player. That's Blackshirt ball. What a play by Charlie Moroz. Diving out of bounds. Hits the poor redheaded still in the head. And then it goes under the Blackshirt bench. So some good theater there, if you will. Good comic relief. Inbound Check to Robinson in the corner. Robinson double covered. Dishes it to Cook. Cook to Moroz. Moroz to Tadioka in the corner. Moroz. Tadioka tries to sneak it into Cook, but it's out of bounds there. You know, that close to the basket with loose coverage, I wouldn't blame Tack for putting that up. That's a makeable shot. Check inbound to Moroz. Moroz looks. Sees Robinson. Robinson back to Moroz. Moroz now dribbles it to the backcourt, left backcourt. Bounce pass to Robinson. Robinson takes a look. He decides to hold on to it. Cross court pass to Cook. Cook to a wide open Tadioka for the easy deuce. So six for the senior. The senior quarterback, honorable mention, all class again. Oh, the North Stars got nailed for an inbound violation. Someone got a little too anxious there, so not a good time for that to happen. Black just leading 65-40, 2:48 remaining. Check inbound to Robinson for a long three from the corner, in and out. Oh, Faber Hernandez with the rebound, now back in the game. Student section wanted an over-the-back foul there in favor of Hernandez, but didn't get it. Williams has the ball now, passed by Haas. Williams for a long two, and the lefty misses. Tadioka the rebound, quick dish to Check. Check dribbles it down. Alley-oop to... That's not going to fall on Cook, and well covered by the North Stars. Faber Hernandez all over that stoppage. And there's a stop. Williams for the layup. He can't make it. Oh, but Faber Hernandez on a great tip. 7 points now for the 6'5 junior. Cook double covered, gives it the Check, and Richter will call a timeout here. Interesting timeout. Oh, he's clearing out the bench. He's bringing in Evan Stout and James Smith and some of the other guys who haven't been seeing a lot of playing time. So smart move by Cook Richter.
Number 12, Evan Stout.
So they're announcing the replacements. Nice. So this is our first time watching Paul Segui Perez. So a lot of youth players out tonight. They're playing during the timeout. The refs are telling them they got to leave. It's been a fun youth night here. At halftime of the varsity game and the JV game, the youth teams had a little scrimmage, and it was a lot of fun. And the kids showed us a lot. The fans were very impressed. So a lot to look forward to in the future of Blackshirt basketball beyond this, what looks like another great season for your Blackshirts. Looking to go undefeated 2-0 with tonight's win in the Classic 8. Yes, they are 2-2, but they lost to two top caliber teams that you may see in the state playoffs. Evan Stout's going to inbound it to Check. James Smith also in. Segal Perez in and Rios Perea. There it is. Oh, the little guy. Ivari. He's in trouble. And a timeout's called by Coach Richter. So Giovanni Rios Ibarra in trouble there. And Coach Richter throws him a lifeline.
30-second timeout.
Giovanni's easily one of the hardest working kids in all of Waukesha South Athletics. And that's why there's always been a spot for him in the black shirt lineup since perhaps the eighth grade team. Teammates love what he brings to this team in practice. So the announcer's letting us know there's a cheer competition tomorrow. That's what all the setup was. I thought they're going to be parent cheerleaders tonight. So my apologies for any confusion. So 1:51 remaining. Blackshirts leading 65-42, but the interest here is now guys coming off the bench. They're going to show us something. Evan Stout inbounds it. Stout inbounds to Check, knocked out of bounds by Sutner. Tenacious D there by the North Star guard. Had a pretty solid game tonight. Stout again, he hits a wide open James Smith, top of the key. Smith the Check. Check gives it to Ibarra. Ibarra's going to drive the basket. Oh, he's looking for a wide open Segui Perez, but Haas with the steal and the layup for Cooper Haas. 6 points for him. Check going to bring it up. Stout gets the ball now in the pass. Stout back to Check. Check drives. Kicks it to an open Perez. Perez shot blocked by Faber-Gonzalez. Segui Perez is shot blocked by Faber-Gonzalez, or Faber-Hernandez, excuse me. And he's fouled by Segui Perez is first. And now the North Stars will put some of their scrubs in with 1:14 remaining. Hey, if you can't score, get a foul. So So Favor Hernandez, the junior, with 7 points tonight and four rebounds. Couple assists, too. Favor Hernandez, first shot. And that one falls short. Top of the rim, so. Right stop's going to come in for Ethan Check, who gets a well-deserved break. Check comes out with 4 points. Two assists, three rebounds. And draw two charges. And manage to get four fouls. Second shot also misses. James Smith on the rebound. Hits Brighton Staub. Staub will bring it up now for the Black Shirts. Steve Stout. Stout for the three. Evan Stout. Oh, off the back of the rim. Rebounded by Smith. Smith to Staub. See, Rio Samara gets stolen by Miles. He makes the layup. So two for Miles. So 51.7 seconds, and the North Stars will put some more subs in. Number 15, Nicholas Bingenheimer, gets his first looks tonight. Eichstad's back in. Number 14, Jordan Sayavong, gets his first time tonight. Stout inbounds to Staub. Stout sends Smith cutting. They both cut. Double pick for Siggy Perez to Smith in the corner. Smith nowhere to go. Smith to Stout. Stout back to Siggy Perez. Trouble with the ball here. Goes around to pick by Stout. Nowhere to go. Give and go. There's Stout underneath. Stout gets the ball straight out. He gets a foul. So Stout's going to go to the line. The neighbor and childhood friend of Tommy Karinko's, the other Empire State Building, Empire Street Building, that is, for the Black Shirts. Stop. Evan's mom, Melissa Brown, and Tommy's mom, Mary Alice Karinko, sitting together. Stout misses the first one. What a chump. So now here's number four, and Jacob Noel can't do anything with it. Long shot by Miles, no good. Stout gets the rebound. He wants to go coast to coast. He's got it open. No, Stout's going to take it himself, and he gets fouled. He's going to go back to the line there. Jacob Eichstad with the foul. So Stout had to, he had Siggy Perez, but he wanted to take it himself. He had the look, and he drew a foul. So 8.7 seconds here. Stout looking to get his name in the paper. First one, yes. That's my boy, Evan Stout. His first varsity point. Stout and Moreau's were called up to the varsity team during playoff time last year. Second one's good by Stout. So neither of them played, but Coach Richter awarded them both with the varsity letter after being part of the great effort. So last shot of the game. It'll be Sutner if he gets it off on time. No, it's not Sutner. The final shot by Nicholas Bingenheimer, I don't think it counts, but either way, the Black Shirts win 67-48. Another big win for the Black Shirts in conference play. We'll be back on Tuesday night as the Black Shirts travel to Muskego to take on the Warriors. So we want to thank everybody for joining us tonight. And as the announcer says, when you get home, hug your children. That's the message from our PA here. And my message, of course, is that safety is everyone's responsibility, especially now that the snow is on the ground. And that includes you, Calvin. Safe drive back home there. Calvin, we'll see you tomorrow morning at 7:30. I'll get you the music later tonight. This has been the Black Shirt Sports Radio Network here on 101 FM, 540 AM, The Shaw. Join us tomorrow, 8 AM, for This Week in Waukesha. Have a good night and see ya!
This is Don Brown inviting you to get local with me every Saturday morning, 8 o'clock, on my show, This Week in Waukesha, live from the office of former Alderman Don Paul Brown. Local news, local sports, local people, local music and culture. This Week in Waukesha, every Saturday, 8 a.m., here on Walk Radio, 540 a.m., 101 FM. The Shaw.
Say goodnight to Calvin.
Where? power or money to be made. And we see it all the time. So, no, these people are not better than us. They're just, their brains are wired different, and they don't mind using underhanded tactics and whatnot to make money.
Yeah. Well, as I always say, behind every great billionaire is a great crime.
That's totally true.
And you just have to look. You just have to look. And I mean, it's not that difficult. But you know, this is where we are. And the hope is that we begin to wake up. We take off our red hats and our blue hats and we put the flags away and we start coming back to the middle of the ground and we start talking about how do we hold the people who are really screwing us over accountable. I'm not hopeful that that's going to happen in the new year, but I'm trying to believe that it is possible.
I think the only thing that would help is, maybe some more, and I'm going to say it again, Biden should come up with a new law, but this time add more mental hospitals and mental health care facilities to the infrastructure. I think that's about the only thing that's going to help.
But you
have a good one, and I'm glad you're back in the studio.
Thanks.
Oh, and thanks for having David on tonight.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Alice. Good stuff, as always. No, I mean, you know, look, the reality in this is it's simple. If we're not going to use the power of our government to ensure that the basic needs of our citizens are met while we're enriching the wildly powerful and the wildly wealthy, our government's broken. And this is why, you know, the old quote attributed to Jay Gould is so appropriate. I could easily pay half the working class to murder the other half, because while we're literally eating each other, while we're ostracizing each other from each other's families and all the craziness that's been going on, they're literally gouging us. This is something that we should be agreeing on. This is something that every person in the working class should get on a visceral level. That every time things get bad, oh, sorry, we need concessions. We need to cut your wages. We need to cut your benefits. We need to make you work longer and harder. You look at the railroads. Wildly profitable, made $23 billion profit last year. First three quarters of this year, $22.1 billion profit. And yet, sorry, you can't have sick days. I mean, this is something that every working person should go, that's insane. I don't care what hat you're wearing, what flag you bought, what t-shirt you wear, what underwear you wear, don't care. This is where we should be going, that's wrong. But because of which side it's on, because of, you know, it's Biden in the White House, it's now become this political football of it's right or left. And again, this isn't right or left. This is up, down. It's not about Democrats and Republicans. It's about the greedy against the rest of us, which is why I'm thrilled to see that there's so much organizing going on. I was down in Georgia and, you know, talking with union members. Georgia, a no rights at work state. And they're organizing workers as we speak. Today, you had the big demonstration by Starbucks workers. You know that there have been some 7,000 Starbucks workers who have you know, fought to form unions in hundreds of new places across this country. And yet our labor laws are so badly broken that they're nowhere nearer to getting a contract yet. And this is where we should be supporting every worker's right to organize and to fight back. And again, I keep saying this, and I say this because I believe it to be the reality. The way we pull this country back together, the way we get out of the red hat, blue hat stuff, is by making sure we're talking about the green. The only color that matters to me and should matter to the working class is green. Because they do. They separate us on red hat, blue hat, black, white, male, female, gay, straight. All of those divisions, as long as we're eating each other, we're not looking to them. And this is where we have got to put all those divisions aside and go, you know what? I don't care what the family over there does, as long as they're not hungry, as long as they're not homeless. You know, this idea of hooray for me and the heck with everyone else, at some level, does have to stop. And we do have to come back together. Because again, you know, as we're divided, as we're sliced and diced and pitted against each other, they're literally robbing us blind. And you know they are. And you know the struggle is real. The question is, what are we going to do about it? That's the question. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. When we come back, a Pennsylvania state representative has written an interesting piece. You know, what titled, you know, why are only working people ever asked to sacrifice this for me?
A progressive voice for rural Wisconsin. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
Capitol Riot. I'm Ben Thomas with an AP News Minute. More sentencings. Ronald Sandlin, a Tennessee man who authorities say came to Washington in a car full of weapons and assaulted officers trying to defend the Capitol, has been sentenced to more than 5 years in prison, while the founder of the Hawaii Proud Boys chapter, Nicholas Oakes, and Nicholas DiCarlo of Fort Worth, Texas, each sentenced to 4 years. The longest sentence so far has been 10 years for a former New York City police officer who assaulted an officer at the Capitol with a flagpole. The Proud Boys' former national chairman, Enrique Tarrio, and other leaders of the group are set to stand trial later this month on seditious conspiracy and other charges. Oath Keepers founder Stuart Rhodes and the leader of the group's Florida chapter, Kelly Meggs, were convicted of seditious conspiracy last month. Meantime, lawyers for Donald Trump were in federal court in Washington Friday for sealed arguments in the investigation of classified information found at the former president's Florida estate. I'm Ben Thomas.
Girls and boys in poverty around the world are dreaming of a better life, filled with dance, art, music, and knowledge. They dream of a brighter future with enough nutritious food to eat, a chance to learn and grow, to get an education, escape poverty, and do incredible things. Today, thanks to Children International and friends like you, such dreams are coming true. Together, we give children a chance to set their sights high and succeed in school and in life by ensuring that they have access to healthcare, education, life skills, and so much more so they can grow, thrive, and believe in themselves. Learn more about Children International and join us in our life-changing work at children.org today. Together, we can help end poverty for good.
Hey, this is Matt from Design Garden. Remember when the internet was new? Back then you had to leave your house to start a business. Companies used to pay programmers bags of cash to get online. Now, small businesses can get online with a Facebook business page, or Squarespace, or Google My Business, or WordPress. But which tools should you use? Can you afford to go down the wrong path? Design Garden uses modern tools to build your website the right way. Find us online at design.garden. Again, that's design.garden.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
It's 4 a.m. and you're sucking baby snot through a tube because she's congested. If you love her that much, love her enough to make sure she's buckled in the right car seat. Find out more at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matinee with your headlines. Some of Wisconsin's largest utilities say they're ready to respond after a recent gunfire attack on substations in North Carolina left thousands of people in the dark. The targeted attack by one or more people damaged equipment and left over 45,000 customers without power on Saturday. Thousands remained without power until the company repaired the damaged equipment and gradually restored power on Wednesday. The Associated Press reporting federal authorities warn the power grid is a target for domestic extremists who've been developing specific plans to attack infrastructure since at least 2020. In February, Oshkosh resident Jackson Solwell pled guilty to conspiring to provide material support to terrorists. After plotting to attack a Midwest substation using rifles to penetrate transformers, Solwell and conspirators said they were willing to die in the scheme. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK, 540 AM.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So there was a Washington Post story back in September. Maybe you saw it. They were talking about the BNSF railroad worker who, I can understand, these guys are on call like 90% of the time. You go back to the article and they point out that it's 24/7, 365. That's their job. They're on call all the time. And this article pointed out that, you know, the reality is that if workers take off because they're sick, they get penalized, disciplined up to and including being fired. Well, they pointed out this railroad engineer, Aaron Hiles, he put off going to the doctor. Because why? Well, he feared he was going to get fired. He feared that there would be repercussions if he took time off to go get health checked. And a week later, he died of a heart attack. This is why people need sick days. This is why people need to be able to plan their days. And the interesting thing is, well, this was a great moment for the administration to come out and rally the country together and say, you know what? We're going to make sure that every person has sick days so no one has to do this. Missed opportunity in my view, and here to share some thoughts on, well, this and why is it? You know, why is it that workers are always the ones who are being asked to sacrifice, but we never seem to ask our billionaire friends to kick in a little bit, and that's why I've asked Pennsylvania State Representative Nick Pisitano to come talk with us. He's got a piece out now asking that very question. Nick, thanks for taking time for us.
Sure. Thanks for having me, Rick. Looking forward to it.
So, you know, I look at this and, you know, this is a moment where, you know, and I've been really hard on the Biden administration for what I think was a grievous mistake in forcing these workers to take what was rammed down their throats. I think they could have done it a lot better, but I'm curious your thoughts.
Yeah, and I agree. I think that, you know, without knowing the intricacies of what happened in the background, you know, it's easy to make judgments, but from an outsider's perspective, this could have been handled a lot better. You know, the president was faced with an impossible situation of, you know, shut down the economy, which would hurt workers as well. Like, let's be clear about that. Or use the unique power of Congress to kind of ram this agreement down the railroaders' throats here. And it's just kind of a lose-lose argument. There's no good choice there. And I think the point of my piece is that, you know, we keep getting hoisted on these lose-lose decisions, right? And the root cause of that, those decisions coming up repeatedly, is just the way that the economy is structured these days and how unfair it is for most people living in this country.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you just go, at some point, the workers should win at least once. And right. This is kind of where my mind is. And look, I understand the president was in a tough spot. I understand the economy, you know, we were being sold it was going to be the end of humanity days before Christmas. And I agree with this, but this could have been a moment to say, you know what, we're going to run one bill. It's going to have those sick days in it, make Republicans vote it down and say, look, this is an opportunity for right, left, top, you know, in the middle for people to come together and say, you know what, it's a human rights thing. It's a workers' rights thing that everyone should have some ability to get sick time. I see this as a missed opportunity.
Yeah, and I think there were a lot of tools still in the toolbox here, right? There were options related to executive orders with paid sick time. There are both carrots and sticks for the president and his administration to use with the railroad companies. The railroads are heavily regulated by the federal government. The state government has almost no jurisdiction in railroad because they so heavily involve interstate commerce, right? Yep. So they have a lot of levers they could have pulled to try and get a better deal for the workers here. And it does feel like we gave up a little bit too early and the workers are going to be the ones who pay for it.
Now, the message we didn't hear enough of, and I hear on this program, it's what I hammered on the entire time, is the fact that this is another example of mass consolidation gone awry. This is monopoly biting us in the behind. And as you point out in your piece, you know, back in 1980, there were 33 major railroads. Today, we have 7. This kind of lack of competition, this kind of too big to fail arena that we're in, causes these situations because these rail companies were not going to give in. They were willing to crash our economy. They were willing to play political chicken and do this because they knew they had the power to do it.
Yeah. And in my piece, I talk about how no matter what President Biden decided to do on this situation, it was never going to be the railroad companies that paid the price. It was going to be working folks and ordinary Americans, middle-class Americans and railroad workers that were ultimately going to pay the price, no matter what decision he made. And that's a larger symptom of, like you said, the over-concentration of our economy. In almost every sector, Rick, there is just a handful of companies controlling the supply, the demand, everything in between, vertical, horizontal monopolization. And when you start to look at the economy that way and realize what's going on, you start to see the same pattern over and over again. So this week it was railroad workers and railroads, right? Heavily consolidated from 33 to just 7. Two of them are seeking approval to merge right now to go down to 6. And, you know, that's a problem. And that's why the railroad companies are insulated from any kind of repercussions. But the same pattern played out with Taylor Swift tickets just a couple weeks ago when Ticketmaster monopolizes the entire live concert venue market. And so they don't have any incentive or any competition that drives them to do a good job. So you have situations where a company whose whole existence is based on selling tickets to a concert that can't sell tickets to a concert because it has no competition, no innovation, and it's just stifling that entire market.
Yeah, and gouging the consumer along the way. I mean, this is my problem of where we are. You know, we've been talking about inflation for the last several months, and, you know, everyone's pointing to Biden. It's Biden's bad policies that did this. It's those greedy workers, Nick. They want it's greedy workers and bad Biden, when the reality is it's greedy corporate CEOs who've been gouging our eyes out.
Yeah, and, you know, me and my colleagues in the Pennsylvania House went very hard on this line of questioning in the summer months when gas was outrageous. And at the same time that everybody was making noise about the record inflation, corporations were announcing record profits. So how could the prices of inputs and outputs be so much higher due to inflation at the same time that the bottom line of these corporations, you know, the income minus the expense, are also record highs? So if you're making record profits and charging record high prices, it's not inflation. There's a straight line correlation between those two things, what you're charging and how much money you're making. And, you know, we had countless examples from CEO, investor calls, Wall Street calls, bragging basically about how companies were price drivers or they had the market cornered so they could charge whatever they wanted. Inflation was good for them. They were saying this in public forums. They were not shy about it. And, you know, in my opinion, that was not enough. That was not a big enough part of that discussion around the inflationary pressures that ordinary Americans were facing at that time.
Right. And this is where, you know, Nick, I come back to this. You know, we're divided. We got our red hats. We got our blue hats. We posted our flags in the ground. So we're literally eating each other. And the reality is at some point we got to take the red hats and the blue hats off and maybe, you know, turn this a little bit. And instead of looking at each other, right, left, blue, red, start looking at this top down, because, you know, those people looking down on us in those ivory towers, they are literally robbing us blind.
Yeah. And I mean, the one biggest example, which I think has resonated the most, is the baby formula shortages. I mean, in this country, there are only four companies that manufacture 90% of the formula sold in the United States. We have rules that we can't import formula from other countries because of our health and safety standards. And when one plant in the entire nation had a problem, we, the richest country in the world, have problems feeding its newborn children. I mean, that is outrageous. And I don't think that's a partisan issue. I think people on every part of the political spectrum understand that that is a symptom of a system that is broken and that is unacceptable and should be unacceptable. So I think that when you talk concretely about examples like baby formula or Ticketmaster or these railroad workers, people start to understand that the rules of the game are not set up in a way that are fair to the vast majority of Americans here.
You listen to the Rick Smith Show here with Pennsylvania State Representative Nick Pisitano. He is the chair of the House Democratic Policy Subcommittee on Labor, Energy, and Development, also the chair of the Allegheny County House Democratic Delegation. But here again, you know, I look at this and, you know, our supply chain coming out of this pandemic, you know, I think everyone knows is broken and, you know, set up to benefit the very, very wealthy, to benefit a handful of corporations. And then again, us at the bottom, we're the ones who are told tighten the belt, you know, take the wage cuts, take the concessions, take the lower health care benefits, the lower retirement security, you know, take all of this on the chin, because we've got to be slaves to the bad, broken supply chain. Is there policy that can move us from this? Is there something on the state level? Does this have to come from the federal level? How do you see this?
Yeah, so the brittle supply chain is really a symptom of the same cause, the monopolization cause. When a company corners 90% of the market of any good, the only way they can squeeze out more profit after doing that is to make their supply chain as efficient as possible, meaning as soon as a bottle of formula comes off the line, it's instantly on it, replaced on a shelf by one that was just purchased. They cut all the labor costs down. They cut all the transportation costs down. You know, if they're allowed, they outsource those jobs to cheaper, lower wage countries. And that's all, you know, the brittle supply chain that we saw during and after COVID was all another outcome from the monopolization of the economy. And so the answer to your question is that the way to solve this problem is to take that monopoly problem in this nation head on. Historically, the United States of America has been a anti-monopoly country. You know, school kids learn about the robber baron period and the trust busters and Teddy Roosevelt, who went after Standard Oil and AT&T later, and all these companies who had done these things and cornered the market, and consumers and workers suffered as a result. We have always been a country that went after those and broke those companies up and realized that monopolies were not good. And unfortunately, in the last generation or so, that we have gotten away from that. And what we need to do is revitalize kind of that spirit of anti-monopolization and refresh both state and federal law to be effective in kind of the new marketplace. So on the state level in Pennsylvania, my colleagues and I have introduced a number of bills that would give our attorney general some extra power, change the burden of proof standards a little bit so it was easier to go after some of these bad actors. And the proof is in the pudding. During COVID, our attorney general did go after people who were doing monopolistic acts, and he was able to find a bunch of them guilty. But once that emergency ended, the law changed back to its current state, where it's very difficult to kind of catch these people and prove that they're doing wrong. So we have a number of bills to update those standards. We hope to have a robust debate about what that would look like, and then that goes into law in the near future.
Yeah, because I'm looking at this, and you brought up Teddy Roosevelt, and I've asked for a couple of years now, who's going to be this generation's Teddy Roosevelt? Is it going to be Amy Klobuchar? I know right now she's pushing some antitrust legislation that I'm hoping grabs some traction in the new year, because I'm sorry, you know, a handful of companies controlling, you know, our meat production, our baby formula, you name the industry, you have just a handful of hedge fund owned, corporate dominated companies in these industries that, again, there's no competition. And I know my friends on the right, you know, your colleagues on the right, and they say they believe in competition, yet it doesn't seem to be playing out.
Yeah, and you know, some of the other op-ed and public pieces that we pushed have always said that, you know, competition is the engine in the American economy, right? It's always been based on the cream rises to the top, the best ideas, the hardest workers, the most innovative approaches. Those are the ones that succeed in our system. And when you stifle that ability to compete, you're stifling innovation, you're stifling entrepreneurship, and you're stagnating the entire economy, you know, to profit a very, very small few number of people. And so that is the problem, and that's what we need to go after. Yeah. I mean, the craziest thing is, if you go to the supermarket, you go in the cereal aisle, it seems like there's a ton of choice, right? Well, all the major cereals in that aisle are owned by three companies. They're all owned by General Mills, Kellogg's, or one other small company. And so it looks like there's choice. It looks like there's competition. But at the end of the day, everything has been so monopolized that you don't even realize that no matter which one you buy, the money is going to the same person at the end of the day.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing right there. Because we all think there's all this choice out there. But at the end of the day, there's one guy standing behind the curtain with the puppet strings. And again, I come back to who's going to be that Teddy Roosevelt of this generation, and we desperately need it. I know I got to move on here in a second, but I want to get your thoughts on next year. Democrats may be taking control of the House here in Pennsylvania for the first time in, well, over a decade, I believe. But there's some intrigue. Where are we going this January?
Yeah, so there's 203 members of the Pennsylvania House of Representatives. Democrats on the ballot won 102 of them, giving us a slim one seat majority. Unfortunately, one of our colleagues, the longest serving member from Allegheny County, where I served, passed away shortly before the election, which means on swearing in day, it'll be 101-101, a tie with one vacancy. So this is kind of an unprecedented situation. There are, you know, a bunch of legal maneuvers that are happening. But at the end of the day, eventually that seat will be filled by a Democrat, and we will have the majority in Harrisburg for the first time in 12 years, which is good because we have a Democratic governor. The Republicans still hold the Senate. So it actually does push everybody in a direction of compromise and get things done, which you know, the topics that we're talking about tonight, I think, have bipartisan appeal on both sides of the aisle. So that's why I'm optimistic. I think some of these things could be coming down the pipe in Pennsylvania soon.
I sure hope so, because I got to tell you, I look at our General Assembly here in Pennsylvania, and it's been crazy for a while. I got to be honest, been kind of crazy for a while.
Yeah, I think Republicans have controlled both houses of the General Assembly in Pennsylvania for nearly 30 years. And any time that you have one party that controls any kind of body, whether that's the legislature or the executives, there's some stagnation there. And you get a little bit more into the politics and a little bit further away from what the people are asking their legislators to do.
Well, we need people in those halls to fight for working people. And I'm glad you're there. And I hope you'll come back and share some more thoughts and ideas on how we're going to help rebuild, re-energize, revitalize the working class of this country. Nick, I appreciate the time.
Thank you. Have a good evening.
Good stuff. Nick Pisitano. He is the chair of the House Democratic Policy Subcommittee on Labor, Energy and Development. I'm sure we will have him back as the days go on, because we need good policy, folks. I tell you, all this bad stuff happened because of bad policy. We can undo it with good stuff. Want to hear your thoughts? 1-866-416-RICK, 1-866-416-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1953. That was the day that Ralph Cordiner, president of General Electric, issued his Cordiner Doctrine. It was the height of McCarthyism and the second Red Scare. The House Un-American Activities Committee persisted in its witch hunting of trade unionists, labor militants, and alleged communists. It targeted many of the unions purged from the CIO in 1949. The United Electrical Workers was one of those unions. The UE had organized the electrical manufacturing industry, including General Electric. Wisconsin Senator Joe McCarthy and HUAC each began investigating UE Local 301 at the General Electric plant in Schenectady, New York. GE didn't like the militancy of the UE or the bad publicity McCarthy generated about the company harboring subversives. So President Cordiner issued a memo which stated that any employee called before a Senate or legislative committee hearing who invoked the Fifth Amendment in response to inquiries regarding alleged communist ties shall be terminated. When McCarthy came to Albany, New York to hold hearings on alleged subversive activities 3 months later, hundreds of UE members packed the room, booing and jeering the senator and cheering the defendants. One African-American worker demanded, "Why don't you investigate subversion by GE of the Jim Crow system, of the profits taken from the sweat of my people?" McCarthy abruptly ended the hearings, but 28 UE members would be fired at General Electric. Other electrical manufacturers like Westinghouse soon followed suit. It was a devastating blow to the union and to the fired members who had helped build the UE from the ground up. But the union persevered and remains a powerful representative force for workers in the industry today.
Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
I got to come back to the reality that we need to have, more than anything, competition in the marketplace. And I can't believe that I'm, you know, spewing the right-wing line. This is what Republicans are supposed to be doing. This is what the GOP is supposed to be behind. You know, competition in the marketplace. You know, get government out of our way. You know, let industry compete. But sadly, what happens in the brave new world of conservative economics, the big fish always eats the little fish. And what you end up with is one big giant fish. And then eventually they run out of other companies to eat. And what do? Well, they eat the consumers, which is why it was shocking, you know, surprising, you know, in August of 19, when the Business Roundtable came out with their we now care about our workers. We care about our consumers. We care about our communities. It's no longer about maximizing shareholder profits. And then we have the pandemic that did exactly what? Oh, yeah. Maximized shareholders' value and didn't give a tinker's damn about workers, communities, or customers. this is where, again, bad policy on both sides of the aisle. Look, you know, there are corporate Democrats who are just as bad. This was bad policy. This was bipartisan policy. And I've been screaming about this for a very long time. You cannot have just one or two companies who are doing this kind of stuff. You have got to have true competition, which means numerous companies. I know, but Rick, you know, the consumer decides. Yeah, I would decide. You go to the shelf. If there was an American-made product, I would decide to buy that. I would pay the extra buck, and I know a lot of people who would. But we don't get that option. Because, well, big global corporations are taking over as we speak. The fact that, as Nick pointed out, there are really two companies that control all of the cereal production in this country. Two. There's another small one that's trying, but for the most part, two. Beer production. There are a handful of companies that do this. I know there's all this craft brew. Yeah. Owned by one of the big companies. There's a lot of this stuff that goes on. Because we don't have the kind of competition that would foster a market that competes. So what happens? The consumer loses. And this is where we are. Is it surprising? No. I mean, the Ticketmaster thing is a perfect example. They have the power and control because they have basically the sole rights to a commodity that people want. So you're going to pay the $15, $20 per ticket and service fees. And whatever else they decide to tack on. And the poor customer service and all the stuff that comes with it. You shocked? Oh my goodness. Surprising. And yet again, we are the ones who end up taking it on the chin. Every time there's a technological change, who takes it on the chin? The working class. Understand, when automation comes online, and it's going to, I tell this to my truck driver buddies. This is why we should be pushing for a technology tax. Say, look, yeah, we understand that we're going to automated trucks at some point in the future. But there should be a technology tax in place so when that transition happens, the people who are doing those jobs right now don't get left out in the cold. Because this is what we do all the time. And yet there's no real movement to secure the working class's position. There's nothing there to secure their losses. We secure corporate America's losses. Oh boy, do we. We bail them out all the time. But you want to help a working person? Forget about it. Trade adjustment assistance. No longer in place. Why? Because Republicans held it hostage. So if your job gets outsourced because of competition or lost because of, you know, trade with China or whatever, you're out of luck now. There's not even the meager benefit that the TAA was, which is to be able to collect unemployment for 2 years and get some meager job training so that you can get a barely above minimum wage job down the road. And you wonder why people are angry. You wonder why people are frustrated. You wonder why we're in this Hunger Games moment. Because we've been forced into this me, me, me. I got to worry about me. I got to worry about mine. Because we know there's no we left. And this is where policy, and I keep coming back to our government, us doing collectively what we cannot do individually, ensuring that the working class does not fall through the cracks or more likely get stomped on through the cracks. And you go, but you know, the Democrats are just as bad. In some cases, yes. But the reality is the last help for working people right now are Democrats. For instance, you look at the fact that the Butch Lewis passed. Just yesterday, the letters went out to thousands of Teamster retirees and members of multi-employer pension funds that, you know what? The money's in the bank. You're not going to lose your pension. You're not going to be destitute in your retirement years. The promises that were made to you are going to be kept because the Biden administration and Democrats voted for it. This is one of those moments, folks. Which side are you on? For my Teamster buddies, and I was just in Georgia talking to a bunch of Teamsters saying, look, this saved the pension. Trump didn't do that. Had the chance. They lobbied him for 4 years. Wouldn't do it. It got done. And those families now, those hundreds of thousands of families across this country that are dependent on that retirement check, they're going to sleep a lot better tonight. Why? Because of policy. Because of who we voted for. It's that simple. Love to hear your thoughts. Email me, Rick, at therickSmithShow.com.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.